Good morning. It is the 29th of April, 2024 in Eastertide. And I'm trying not to chuckle because of what I'm about to lead in with this before we get to our main news story. So from katholisch.de, the official news arm of the German bishops, we get this. Happy Deaconess Day. Yesterday is Deaconess Day in Germany. Their headline is Central Event for Deaconess Day and Spare, Demand for the Opening of Ordination Offices. This was published yesterday on the 28th. If you scroll down here, we get this little tidbit. Since 1998, Deaconess Day has been celebrated in Germany on April 29th. Although there are currently no female deacons in the Catholic Church, only deacons. But that could change. There are prominent supporters. I'm going to correct this. Friday or Saturday, this weekend was kind of a blur for those who know about what was going on in Oklahoma this weekend. But I reported that in Germany, a bishop declared a 13 female seminary graduates to be deaconesses in the spirit, whatever that means. But yes, since 1998, for 26 years, they've been celebrating Deaconess Day in the church in Germany. And I chuckle at this. But I will tell you right now, I've been that story, and I'll do a follow-up to that. But here's the hint on that follow-up. I have had a couple of priests email me in the last 4 days or so telling me stories about here in the United States, women graduating from seminary and being told that they just needed to bide their time, that the church would change its teaching on ordination, and that they could become ordained deaconesses, and that there are plenty of this of people in that position waiting in the wings for what may be coming later in the year. Although I tend to think it's not going to be ordained, whatever they do. It's going to look in every way like an ordination, but we'll be reassured that it's not an ordination and will technically not be one because it'll miss one key thing. But we all know that won't stop anybody from doing the ordinations once that happens. That's just how things go. So happy Deaconess Day, everybody. Mark the day by thinking a deaconess near you, I guess. I don't know. Some spicy comments on that and in the responses to that in the live chat. But we're going to go to a story that you may have seen being shared around on Facebook and Twitter yesterday. And this is from Damian Thompson. If you're not familiar with him, he has the Holy Smoke podcast. I would actually suggest you check it out. Once a week or so, he uploads a new episode, and they're short. Audio only, I think. I don't think he's on YouTube, but he published this in Unheard. He does a very good job of putting in one place a lot of the things we've seen, including with some information that is not widely known, hence why he's sort of exposing a lot of the rot going on in the church right now that he is directly at the center of. So his headline is "The Scandals Haunting Pope Francis. Scheming cardinals are sharpening their knives." I will start this by reiterating a couple of things. One, you should be praying for him. If you've got the time to criticize him, to think ill of him, you have at least the time to say some prayers for him. Two, it's a mistake, I think, to think that his papacy is coming to an end anytime soon. I do think we're going to be in the, again, I've said this repeatedly recently, but I think we're going to be in the late John Paul II phase of his papacy soon, which is he is going to be very obviously not well in front of most people while he will still continue to do his work behind the scenes. They think that's where we're going to be ending up more before a interregnum begins. But he, all that having been said, it is very clear that with the Demos and Demos II letters being published, that conservative cardinals at least friendly to tradition, are preparing for the next conclave. But I've also reported to you that there are the sort of the successors to the St. Gallen group, that basically just the St. Gallen group again, which is new bishops. They've been meeting also, and they are being able to do, they are among their peers, as you're about to hear from Mr. Thompson here, that they are able to meet more publicly and prepare for the next conclave. And they already have the kind of pope they want figured out, at least the characteristics of him. They want somebody who is on the same page with Francis on virtually everything. Someone who's more charismatic than him, or at least has more discipline over how he says things. but most importantly, somebody they can control. Because Francis does have the tendency to once in a while correct them too. Although I do suspect that they are not, that happens because they don't understand what he's doing. Let's start here. We're not going to go over the whole thing. We're going to focus on one particular part of the story. I could go over this whole story in several live streams over the course of the next week. Mr. Thompson says, the Cardinals are already meeting to discuss who should be the next Pope. Some of the liberal ones who feel safe because they're in favor with the ailing Francis can be seen comparing notes in a bar near the gates of the Vatican. The conservative Cardinals are more nervous. They gather at suppers in each other's apartments or, if they can trust the fawning waiters not to betray them, in a favorite restaurant. Perhaps you can see the flash of a bishop's ring as he taps a piece of gossip into WhatsApp. The Holy See employs world-class electronic spies, so everyone uses a private phone rather than the Vatican-issued ones. Even the phone tappers are busy exchanging information because, like everybody in Rome, they suspect that a painfully fragile Francis, who is often too short of breath to read out his own sermons, hasn't got long to go. They're just guessing, of course. The Pope is secretive about his health, and 2 years ago, he bounced back from major surgery on his colon that was assumed to be advanced. That word you have to carefully use on this platform. Even so, he's 87, the oldest Pope for more than a century, and a conclave can't be too far off. Ludwig Ring Eiffel of the German news agency KNA said in January that seeing the Pope so short of breath at a press conference in which he was too ill to answer prepared questions was, quote, a difficult moment for me, and he can tell that this situation has affected many colleagues emotionally. At the beginning of March, Andrew Napolitano, a retired Superior Court judge from New Jersey, was staying in the papal guest house behind St. Peter's. The Pope is in poor health, can barely speak or walk, and he radiates sadness, he reported. I don't think he'll be there much longer. Vatican nerves are always on edge in the final years of a pontificate. In the case of the conservative Benedict XVI, they were overshadowed by leaks, gleefully reported by a hostile media, revealing flamboyant corruption at the top of the Roman Curia, the government of the Holy See, and Benedict was unable to act. You know, he goes on and talks about here how there's similar problems, except now they're not being reported. That really most of the bad news from Rome, you're going to notice, is from independent reporters, LifeSite News, and their equivalents in Europe. That's where most of this stuff is getting reported now. And then eventually makes its way into the media. The media had to practically be forced to talk about Ted McCarrick back in 2018 and similar kinds of things since then. They love Francis. They really do. You should really think about why that is so much, why the secular media, who is often hostile to Francis, loves him so much, or who are hostile to the church, loves him so much. Anyway, they talk about, this goes on, and he starts talking about Marco Rupnik. We know about Rupnik. I've covered Rupnik so much that now if I do a Rupnik video, nobody cares. That's how much I've talked about it. But, you know, people have the women that he was overseeing described the community they lived in this way here. I can't, it's definitely a phrase you can't use on this platform. But I think you get the idea. We'll skip past a lot of the grisly details of that. But the backlash to that was eye-opening, and it got a lot of attention from people. And he goes into, again, into painful detail. But here's the one that I think is most interesting. One of the first things I reported on this channel back when I launched it back in 2018 was Bishop Gustavo Zanqueta. He caused quite a stir in Argentina and South America and then was whisked away to Rome and given a job that didn't exist until he got there, until he had to be sent back. Francis couldn't keep him under wraps anymore. This story hasn't gone away yet, 6 years later. So here we go, back to the article. Another is still unfolding in Argentina. In 2016, Bishop Gustavo Zanqueta, the former Cardinal Bergoglio's most pampered protege, had to resign from the Diocese of Iran after he was accused of financial corruption and aggressive attempts to attract seminarians. The Pope's response, he airlifted Zanqueta to Rome and invented a job for him, assessor of the funds managed by the administrator of the patrimony of the Apostolic See, the Vatican Treasury. Zanqueta was later convicted of doing those things, even though Rome refused to supply documents requested by the Argentinian court, meaning Francis tried to actually intervene in the Argentinian legal system by simply not cooperating with them, even though he was clearly had done, pushed things way too far with those seminarians. And by way too far, he shouldn't have done anything with them, obviously. But what he did transgressed the civil law. and Francis did not cooperate. Now, it can be debated that when it comes to the episcopate and the priesthood, those things should be handled by the Vatican. And in better times, they would have been. In better times, the McCarrick problem would never have been allowed to fester as long as it did, because men in the priesthood who did such things would have been dealt with and dealt with harshly by the Vatican. We don't live in those times anymore. Zanketa is presently serving his time in a retreat house amid reports that the people who blew the lid off of him and what he had done are actually being harassed by the Vatican. And the story is coming back to haunt Francis, whose enemies, emboldened by his loosening grip on the government of the Holy See, are circulating extremely damaging documents. These suggest that the Pope is even more tangled up in the whole mess than previously suspected. And there are other cases. As Archbishop of Buenos Aires, Francis unsuccessfully attempted to keep a McCarrick-type priest named Father Julio Grassi from facing the consequences of his actions, commissioning a report that branded those that he is said to have caused harm to as actually lying. So now you see we're getting, Thompson's putting the pieces together on this story, where Francis not only shields people by giving them jobs in Rome, he actually uses his influence and his power to just fabricate things, defenses for these people. And he does this consistently. McCarrick had to be gotten rid of because the eyes of the world were on him. That's the only reason they had to get rid of him. And it was made possible because Archbishop Vigano, back in 2018, he carried a lot more weight than he does now. When he spoke, people listened. Not sure why that changed in the intervening years, but once he spoke on that, it forced the media to pay attention. He goes on to say the dark secrets of this pontificate will weigh heavily on cardinals' minds in their pre-conclave discussions before they cast their votes in the Sistine Chapel. They will be speaking in code. No one wants to take the risk of openly trashing the reputation of a recently deceased or retired Supreme Pontiff, but the cardinals will be forced to talk about the increasingly poisonous divisions between liberal and conservative Catholics, which date back to the Second Vatican Council, but have been made far worse under this pontificate. And they will find it hard to draw a line between Francis's policies and his personality, since he takes such visible delight in using his powers to spring surprises on the universal church. I'll pause there for a moment. There is no putting this back in the There is no putting all this back in the box. What Francis has done to inflame divisions in the church, that's going to survive past him. And as you're going to hear from Mr. Thompson shortly, whoever steps out onto the loggia after him, be it another Bergoglian type, or be it a moderate that most people would think of as like really conservative, but in the grand scheme of the history of the church, a moderate, a Benedict XVI comes to mind as a model for that. So think Mueller or somebody like that. Their background is going to go be dug into very deeply. Their theological background, and this is where a lot of people be made uncomfortable by things Cardinal Mueller has said in the past. It was noteworthy that he posted on social media himself how he and James Martin shook hands and exchanged books and greeted each other pleasantly. And as some set of accountists will tell you, Cardinal Mueller has said some very strange things theologically in his past. That stuff will come up if that's somebody like that. And if it's a Bergoglian, it's going to be even worse because you're going to see all the theological stuff, but you're also going to see a lot of the management of the Ted McCarrick types also. The same with the moderates for that as well. Whoever is going to be step out on the loggia had better have a squeaky clean background. And the problem is most of them don't have that squeaky clean background. That's why we always get surprised when a high-ranking American who is very good towards traditional Catholics, suddenly their past comes back to haunt them in some way or another. When that day comes, I guarantee you that's how it's going to play out. And Francis really made all that possible because of the bizarre things he has said publicly. Give you an idea about this. Let's talk here about the changing attitude towards Francis since the beginning. When Francis first took office, most cardinals shared the popular enthusiasm of his informal style, his preference to be known as plain Bishop of Rome, and his abandonment of some of the more comical, interesting choice of words there, Mr. Thompson, trappings of his office, such as the red shoes. Let's pause here. There's nothing comical about the red shoes. They symbolize a pope willing to give his life for the church in the same way that his predecessors, whose whose footsteps he walks in, footsteps often filled with blood of martyrs that they had to walk through because many of them earned that red crown themselves. That's what those red shoes mean. That's why I don't think they're comical. Yeah, they're comical in a modern sort of Western liberalism kind of worldview. But once you step out of that and look at the grand history of the church, they actually take on very important symbolic meaning. And it was why it was so eye-opening that Francis refused to ever wear them. But they quickly discovered that his informal pope, in contrast to his predecessors, liked to rule through executive fiat. Francis has issued a torrent of papal rulings known as motu proprio, literally of his own accord. More than 60 so far, six times more frequently than John Paul II. Let's pause here. Okay, so that makes it sound like John Paul II put around 10 out. John Paul II was around for 27 years. 60 in 11 years is a lot. It's a lot. If Francis were to make it another 16 years by some miracle, that would one put him at 103 years old when he was finally done. But that would mean there'd be something like 150, 160 motu proprios. That is astonishing to think about. Says they have the motu proprios have made massive changes to liturgy, finance, government, and canon law. They often land without warning and can be brutal. The Pope has used his mechanism to seize control of the Order of Malta, for example, and to strip away the privileges of the secretive but ultra-loyal organization Opus Dei. Two rulings above all traumatize the conservative Catholics for whom Francis nurtures a pathological dislike, rarely missed an opportunity to point out their rigidity or to mock their traditional vestments, decorated with what he calls grandmother's lace. And then he goes, of course, into Traditionis Custodis there. And how few of us actually are traditional Latin Mass Catholics, 1.3 billion Catholics in the world, but only a tiny percent attend the old rite Latin Mass. But why was it a big deal? Well, because of the tendencies it shows for him. But he goes on and he goes on and he goes on, and then it goes into Fiducia Supplicans. And the whole point of this is when you start putting all this stuff together, this paints a rather robust picture of how bad the cardinals are going to have to act at the next conclave. They're going to have to be very quiet about preparing. They're going to have to be careful meeting privately in private apartments, rarely, if ever, electronically, and they can't say things publicly. And when they do, here's what is going to happen. You will have probably Cardinal Mueller stand up at the next conclave, if the next conclave happens before he's forced into total retirement, and he will stand up and say that the church needs a pope who speaks with the voice of a shepherd, who speaks to all Catholics, regardless of their liturgical, quote, preferences, or where they, you know, how they identify with certain kinds of sins, whatever. Speak to the voice of a shepherd to unify everybody, because we've been lacking that. And the response will be from the Bergoglians about how he's insulting the former pontiff. That is how it's going to play out. Because they have the numbers and they have the power. The problem is, will they be able to keep themselves from fragmenting? Francis has made some decent bishops' appointments, it's true, including some of the College of Cardinals, but the vast majority of them are either unknowns to us outside or have been kept from accessing the communications needed to develop those relationships with other cardinals that all of Francis's allies in the Roman Curia who are living there, like the Tobins and a few of the others who are key to the operations of Vatican City, will become the logical people to coordinate the next conclave. And it'll be them that those cardinals turn to. So you're going to see an interesting dynamic play out. And all of this, while probably you'll have some people who might make pretty decent popes, possibly afraid to take the job simply because they will be scrutinized from the very second they step out onto that loggia. And that does not take into account something that I've been quietly looking into, which is external influence on the conclave. Because as it turns out, it looks like there's been a lot of external influence into past conclaves going back decades. And one wonders what that's going to look like, especially if this happens in the next year or so. Thanks, Miriam. Appreciate it. Gregory says God will intervene. Yeah, I tend to think so at some point, but I do also think we're going to get another Francis. Probably. Either that or a moderate. And again, people don't like when I call Benedict the 16th types as moderates, but they are. In the grand history of the church, they are. And the one thing that moderates won't do is try to rock the boat too much. They won't use papal power in the way that Pope St. Pius X did. In fact, St. Pius X famously had a troublesome cardinal. I think it was a modernist. He called him into a private meeting, into a private audience, and he took his red hat off of his head and dismissed him as a father, not cardinal, reducing him to the regular priestly state. After he was gone, there were steps taken to make sure that couldn't happen again. But that's the kind of power you need to have exercised to get rid of a lot of these. Esther says she got distracted by one of my We Were Warned videos. Yeah, that's why I presented them. Colin says, Benedict was definitely a moderate. In the grand history of the church, he was. And maybe that's what we need right now. But what you need is someone who's got the willingness to fight and wield papal power to restore order in the church. Whatever else you might think about whatever position they take, you need that more than anything else. Someone who's willing to fight for the church. And I don't know who that would be right now. Catholic Arrow says this is the anniversary for the passing of Bella Dodd. So please say a prayer for her. And although for those of you joining us late, it's a Deaconess Day in Germany. Like literally the church in Germany celebrates Deaconess Day every year on this day. Makes you wonder a bit, doesn't it? Raven Ray says, so even if by a miracle we get a holy pope after Bergoglio, he'll have his work cut out. Unenviable. Right, and you're going to have people digging into everything he's, whoever he is, everything he's done. And I don't know who could survive that kind of scrutiny. Just checking here before we wrap up. The church is in de facto schism and has been for a while. That's why you've got political factions in the church, which is so weird. I mean, there's always been divisions in the church, but this is almost unprecedented how bad it is right now. I'm working on a video for later in the week where a high-profile prelate on behalf of Francis basically told the American bishops to fall in line. I will agree with this. There are some sentiments in the chat saying that this is Francis isn't the real problem. But they talk about the infiltration in the church. I just think that Francis is actually not the problem so much as he is the logical outcome of what we've seen over the decades. He's just a logical next step. That's something you should bear in mind with thinking about how things will be. You'll either get a course correction in the form of a moderate, or you get a moderate who is meant to just tamp things down, try to simmer things for a while, be there on the throne of Peter for 5 years or something before the next conclave allows us to keep going with the things in the church. That's what you're likely to get. Because I, for the life of me, don't see a Pius the 13th among the cardinals. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't one there. Remember the old act. There's an old axiom we should remember about papal conclaves, which is, you know, he who enters a conclave as the pope walks out as a cardinal. And that is one of the oldest axioms about papal conclaves, because it's true. The only conclave within the last few centuries that I can think of where the outcome was practically predicted accurately was in 2005. Because everybody expected Benedict would become, or Ratzinger would become the pope, and he did, although even that was a contentious conclave. Seurat probably is, although he'd make a good, you know, whole placeholder conciliar kind of one, but the test for any moderate will be what they do with Fernandez and people in positions like Fernandez. And what do they do with synodality, especially if it happens this year, which I don't think it will, but what do they do with the synod of synodality? The smart thing to do would be to cancel the whole thing, end it. And then fire Fernandez. But Fernandez is going to be there till like 2027, something like that. He's got he'll be there till like 2031, I think. He's got an 8-year term as the prefect for the Dicastery of the Doctrine of the Faith. All right, folks. Whip Tips does remind us there's a chance that a pope can have a miraculous transformation. There is this idea. There is an example of that. Leo the 13th was made to be a more, sort of, lack of a better way to describe it, with preconciliar popes, it's kind of language gets dicey, but more of a liberal pope than Pius IX was, his predecessor. but he's apparently within a few weeks of arriving, he took a look around and saw how bad the issue of modernism was already at that time in the 1870s, 1880s. And he shifted to what we now know of as Leo XIII. All right, folks. Son of Talmai says, today my mother's undergoing procedures. Wow, okay. Prayers would be appreciated. So please pray for her. That would be really, really good. Okay, folks. Thanks very much for tuning in today. And as always, pray for the church. I'm Anthony Stein. Ave Maria.